All right, we'll call the budget meeting to order. And I think that we will roll call those present. We have one of the governors not in attendance at this time. Okay, the minutes were on your desk here on the table. I don't know if anyone has had a chance, if everyone has had a chance to go through them, but we have on our agenda to approve the minutes, so if you have. We have a motion.
Second.
All in favor, Mr. Douglas?
Aye.
Ready?
Aye.
Aye.
Mr. Approved. Chairman, committee members, go ahead. The only thing that I have this evening is naturally everyone knows why we're here. We're going to go through this in a fashion of each division, one at a time. If you have any questions on certain things that we're not at yet, just hold those off. We'll be doing each one, and we'll be approving each one as we go with any changes that are made. And any questions that you have, go through the chair, and they would be given to the appropriate person. So, any favor? Next item would be citizens' comments. Anyone that would like to address a committee on any item that is pertinent to our business here, highways, parks, golf facilities, they have 5 minutes to speak. The only thing we ask is that you give your name and address. Are you ready to roll? Yes, sir.
Would you like me at the microphone, or just like this?
You can pick them up, right?
I think not these.
You should pick up on it, John.
Okay. Thank you, Ray. Mr. Chairman, I requested some ideas for, what's that?
We need your name and address.
John Poole, County Supervisor, 6245 237th Avenue, Salem. I requested some ideas for 5% cuts from some of the staff, and that is what they ask at the department heads at the state budget hearings. The legislature does that so that they have the information in case cuts are necessary. And I was disappointed that I did not receive any suggestions. And that means supervisors are left to wonder what items in the budget are lower priority. And the county executive has made his priorities known, such as the mental health changes, countywide bike trails, and infrastructure improvements. And those are noble ideas. But after several years of growth in Kenosha County, it is time for citizens to see some reduction in their tax bills. It would have been nice to see some recommendations for some cuts to offset these new priorities. And in the past 2 years, we've had these budget hearings, and after all the time was expended, there were exactly zero changes in the budget. And if you look at Racine County directly to our north, their budget is 75% of our budget, and they have more population and area than Kenosha County. That makes citizens wonder if we're truly looking at the budget. And I hope this year will be different and the board will consider some changes to reduce the average citizen's tax bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other citizens wish to speak? If not, citizens' comments are closed. So now we're going to review the budget. Mr. Tupper, you're going to begin and lead us. And again, if you have any questions, wait for a pause.
Okay, thank you, Chairman. The way I'd like to do this is we're going to talk for a few minutes at a 30,000-foot level. If you guys can't hear me, you let me know. And then we'll go through each department, as the Chairman said, in the order of the handout that I gave you. So the first page, I just put it up here. This is a comparison of the levy from 16 to 17. And total public works, the levy will go up $37,000 or less than 0.5%. by the time we do all of the public works departments. And as a percentage of the county levy, the county non-library levy, public works is 11.8%. Last year we were 12%. Total county levy, not including the library, for 2017 is 63.9 versus 62.1. If you go down to the bottom part, that little chart, that's our headcount from 2016 to 2017. I'll just do this real quick, and if you have questions, we can talk about it when we go through each department. But Parks levy, or excuse me, Parks headcount is going to go down a little bit. The director retired. Golf levy will go down a little bit. It's mostly due to some changes in the seasonal people that we have, their hours. We do an estimate of how many hours by job. It's a fairly detailed, complicated thing, but at the end of the day, it looks like their hours are going to be down a little bit. Highway, their headcount is going up 4 people. That's a little misleading. We only funded 2 of those positions. The other 2 are in the headcount, but they're not funded. If we do need to do extra work, and that work is paid for by the state, then we will hire the people, but there'll be no effect on levy because any work that they do will just be billed back to the state. And the other 2 that are in there that are being funded, we had the dollars for them in the budget for 2016. They weren't in the headcount. We had planned, or we had been told by the state that there was going to be a level of increased work. We weren't sure, so we put a little cushion or a little extra amount in the budget. We have been doing the work this year. So those people are actually already here. Facilities, the headcount is up by 1. That is a relief custodian that will be hiring 3/4 of the way through the year. And if you go back to 2015, the headcount was 31 or 32. We had 2 part-time custodians who we didn't plan for in 2016. We tried to do without them. It was a hard job to fill. So the headcount went down, but now it's going back up to 31. Planning development, headcount is flat. So between highway, and you'll see highway with the levy going down, all the work that these additional folks do, we will bill back. So they'll do the work and we'll charge it back up. So that's our headcount story.
This highway we were talking before, 2 non-funded, 2 funded. Are those levy dollars that pay the 2 funded positions?
We pay for them, but they're doing work for the state that we'll bill out. So the net levy will be 0. But if we didn't bill them out, then it would be levy.
And I'm speaking of the 4 that we're talking about.
Yeah, they're not management people. They're
okay.
2 of them, I think, are night shift guys that we transfer from day to night, and the other 2 are truck driver laborers.
So if I understand correctly, all 4 positions are basically funded by the state. It's a wash. We're just waiting on the 2 to see if we really have enough work and if the state will pay for it.
Yes. Correct.
That's my question.
Anybody else?
Okay, we'll do planning development. That's on page 2 of the handout. I'm going to see if I can get it up here. Just so you know what page I'm talking about. Okay, planning development is in your big book. It's in pages 135 through 140. The total expenses for P&D for 2017 budget will be $804,000. Last year it was $778,000. The revenues are equal to the expenses. There'll be a change in levy going up of $40,000. I'll point out that in 2016, we had a carryover from 2015 to 2016, some unspent funds. Maybe I should just stop for a minute. Each of these little boxes, the top part is the expense part, comparing the 2 years. The bottom part is the revenues, comparing the 2 years. This isn't in your budget book anywhere, but it's really helpful to kind of see a summary but the numbers agree with what's in the budget book. And then as part of revenue on the bottom, you can see where the levy number is. And it shows you what went up and what went down from year to year. So expenses went up $25,000, total expenses, and really it's in one area, or two areas. Personnel, we're having we didn't hire any additional people. There's one gentleman who's going to get promoted from a land use supervisor to a senior land use supervisor. He's been around, is that right? Land use specialist. Contracted services are actually going to go down. There's one account there. Other professional services. We're going to do a document imaging program. Right now we're trying to image as part of the countywide efforts to image all of our documents and get rid of some paper. We've been trying to do this inside, so next year we put $40,000 in the budget to have it done on the outside, and there'll be a decrease in that account, which is larger than the increase. That is, we had some money to pay for some floodplain expenses in 2016. There's nothing in this budget for floodplain expenses in 2017, so the contracted services go down. When you get to the revenue side, the state aid for land fees is budgeted flat. Permits for and land use fees, we're having a pickup in the volume in the P&D department, so we're budgeting a $10,000 increase. The planning development department is going to take over some duties for folks in the summers in their P&D department, so that's $50,000. And we will not carry over any unspent funds from 2016 to 2017. So you see that carryover number go down. Yes?
On the permits and land use fees, is that a conservative number?
Yes.
You feel that potential is even there for
greater growth? Andy, how high are we going to be this year? We're going to be that 120 this year, right?
Right. Right. And the kind of way this kind of work is just trying to take a 5-year kind of rolling average. And so that's what keeps it conservative from the standpoint that even though we think we'll surpass that this year, but you know, we're just trying to incrementally go up and incrementally go down as we need the transact.
So it's a good number, but it's conservative.
Correct.
Mr. Advisor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to piggyback what Supervisor O'Day had questioned, you mentioned a 5-year average. So it's 120 to 130-ish. That's our 5-year average.
This budget, this planning development budget, no. In the parks budget, when we get to it, there's $50,000.
Okay. So we're keeping going with the purchase.
Correct.
That's my question. Okay.
That's all that I really have for planning and development.
I'm going to add, and again, Andy can fill in a little bit if need be. Next year, programmatically, probably the biggest things that are happening is that we've been providing services, Andy Schott has, to the Village of Summers for a year already, and now this year we're actually going to start charging for those services. The yet-to-be-formally-named Village of Salem Lakes is also going to be coming into the fold this year, and that's the reason for the reclass of the one individual. We've got a senior land use planner, I think is the title right now. We've got a junior, for lack of just a straight up senior land use planner. We're going to put him up to the same level, and basically these people become the primary point of contact for those villages for all their planning and zoning needs. So that's pretty much programmatic of what's going on, just so everybody's aware.
The only thing I'd like to add, if you flip to page 3, there are several small departments. The top four on page 3 are departments within planning development, their support of adjustment. They have a small levy of $8,000. No change from 16 to 17. Then a tree planting program, revolving pre-development, and land and water management. Their expenses that they have are equal to the revenue that they have in. We cannot spend more than what we take in. So, and I have the page numbers there if anybody would like to look at that. Then there's a couple little areas on the bottom too for dog parks and mountain bikes. They're really hard parks. I just put them all on the same page. Next, page 4 is parks. And here we have the top part is the numbers of spending, and then the bottom part is the capital. So as far as the spending goes, salaries in these for parks will be down just a little bit. John Rudy has retired, but we've also built in an increase in the seasonal payroll. We've had to do some adjustments to our seasonal people. There's a lot of competition for people to do these jobs. They keep getting dragged away and hired on by other companies because these are all the jobs that are between $10, $15, $16, $18. So there'll be an increase in that component if you're at that detail line level in your budget book. Miscellaneous contractual services is going to decrease. We had some pet sewer work and some stump removals for the Emerald Ash Borer project this year, which we will not have to have next year, so there's a decrease there. We had some expense accounts where costs were going up. Supervisor Gilmore had asked a specific question about the maintenance account going from $30,000 to $45,000. We have to go into our pavilions in the parks and in the washrooms. I think I explained it was electricity and plumbing projects that would have to do repairs. That's what that amount was. You also had another question about, what's the other account?
Is there right now?
I just want to make sure I cover everything that you asked about in parks.
Well, that was in regards to the building maintenance and supplies?
Yeah, it's the same thing.
It's the same thing, okay.
Yeah.
And then I had some concern with the staff development and the increase there, but after talking, it's on. My questions were answered in regards to that.
Yeah, the staff development is expenses for Mr. Collins, who's new, and we want to make sure that he gets the proper training, so he's going to have go to a few extra training classes in construction and parks management. In order to round out his development. We also have a new account this year, special events. It's mostly for the pet celebration. What is it, their 100th anniversary? 90th anniversary. So there'll be a fest next fall. So we're going to put some money in for that celebration. And parks revenues will increase again, we're already almost at $130,000 for this year. And a lot of the year's over, but we still have some more to go. So we think that $140,000 for next year is a conservative estimate. So the levy for Parks Department is going to go down a little bit, $28,500.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This question isn't just specifically for parks, as it's a recurring theme throughout the division, and I'm sure throughout the county. Can you speak a little bit about the medical insurance increases? I mean, they seem rather sharp year over year. Can you talk about what's going on there?
Well, what we do is we go person by person who's in the budget and look and see if they have a family plan, a single plan, or no plan. The medical insurance expense per person hasn't really changed a lot. So when I put in these descriptions, it changes because of personnel. It's because somebody who was a family or had no plan or single plan took family, or else we have new people have started during the year that are different than what the original budget was because somebody, we hired somebody new who has a different type of plan. So it's not if there's a $10,000 increase, it's not a 20% increase in the amount charged.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's not like that. It's individually calculated as best we can.
And theoretically, moving forward, because obviously my first budget, first time looking at this, I look at the 10-15% increase, and my knee-jerk reaction is that whoever is handling our insurance is taking our eyes out. But now moving forward, you shouldn't see this type of volatility, and even if you do see this type of volatility, you actually can go the other direction just because of the individual plan change.
Yeah, if we say there's five people in the department and they all had single plan, that's $9,000-$10,000 a pop net, what it costs the county less what they contribute. If they were all to go to family plans at $20,000 to $22,000, you'd see that number go from $50,000 up to $250,000. So it's those kind of changes. It's not that drastic a change in the medical plan itself.
The only thing I wanted to add on that, Jim, is I don't know what the overall increase was across the board that's calculated by finance in conjunction with personnel as far as we're self-funded, the county is, and so they work with an actuary to determine what those things need to be based on losses and all that kind of good stuff. So I don't know what the general increase to you.
8%.
Is that net, or is that just us?
That's net. 8% net of health plans.
And so maybe overall, does that, that's less than just this specific spot that I'm looking at that you're speaking to, that individuals change within the plan. But you're talking about the overall plan increased by 8%. If you could elaborate as to why.
Currently, we're projecting over $3 million deficit in health insurance. So, as part of that, we want to be able to be proactive for next year and appropriate funds. In order to do that, we could not.
Can you speak up, please? I'm sorry.
Sure.
I'm having a.
We could not budget $3 million increase. So, as part of that, we increased it, and as part of that, we've done health plan design changes to offset some. Employee contributions and other health plan design changes and save money.
This $3 million deficit that you speak of, is this typical?
No.
Or is this something that hit us this year that we're now having to nibble again?
It is atypical. This year we're having an unprecedented amount of claims that they call our corridor. We have stop loss insurance that cuts off our liability at $150,000 per individual. This year we have an unprecedented number of employees that lose medical claims are between 75 and 100. Transplants,
guys all know Barna Bench. He's the budget director, and he works in the finance department. So if you never met Barna, he's here to answer these types of questions.
Never have, I'm glad he's here.
Thanks, Barna. Thanks for coming.
Anything else after this?
The list of capital items is there for the Parks Department. There's some equipment. Then there's the $50,000 for the Kemper Capital Project. There's the $50,000 for the floodplain that Supervisor Grady was asking about. And again, we don't really go looking to spend money on the flood. If something, an opportunity comes up, and we think we can pick up a piece of property, and we've been doing this since at least 20 years. The county started out with 300 possible properties. We maybe bought half of them. And a lot of it has been through funding from FEMA and places like that. But we put this in here just in case something comes along that we would like to do. And then there's park building roof replacements and parkland development, which is $75,000 we'll spend on park-related things that we get the revenue for, which is down a couple other lines from waste management. So that's a zero cost.
Yeah, can we go back up to the page 120 at the top? I'm looking at Kemper Center donations, and I wanted to bring this up this evening. I know I talked to Ray and Jim today, and you know, I proposed this specific question: if we had to cut this budget at some area, where could we see the cuts? And this is one area that I specifically would like to see us maybe. I'm looking at Kemper Center, and I've looked at them extensively. They've come across this facilities committee several times. Tonight I'm asking or proposing that we take a deeper look into the money that we're giving to Kemper Center. If we discuss that a little bit further, I know over the period of the 25 years or so that we've worked with Kemper Center, we've given them over $6 million. We're giving them $100,000, and right here it's saying we're giving it as a donation, and we're also giving them $50,000 a year for CIP. And I'd like to propose a 5% increase in it. And I don't believe that it's unreasonable to ask for 5% of that back. At 5%, it would be about $7,900. That's one way. I don't believe that it would be undoable to ask them to hold an additional event fee, or so that's just something that I've been thinking through.
Jim, do you have a somewhat of an explanation or the history of that donation at the Capitol?
I do.
We
anticipate.
Huh?
Trying to anticipate.
I appreciate
the question.
You bringing it. Yes. Thank you.
The capital part is for repair. Generally, we've done that. They keep our investment up.
Right.
Parking lot, roads, that type of thing. So possibly just get even more repair.
What this is a roll forward of spending for the capital part in the last. And I went back to 2013, and Kemper keeps a special fund. They have a separate account. And back in 2013, the amount was about $66,000 that they had in the fund. And then in 2013, they received $50,000, and then it shows what they spent. And the backup to this is what they spent on. So you can see this roll forward of going to run out of these problems. I'll give you just a chance to look at it. This is not the operating part. The operating part that Supervisor Gilmore is talking about, we give them, there's a grant for $100,000 a year, and Kemper spends it mostly on utilities. Their utility bills, like $90,000 a year.
Can I make a comment here?
All right.
Can I ask you?
Yes.
Okay, I've seen this because I, Jim, you did bring this to a finance and administration meeting.
Yeah.
That was brought up there. One concern I have with this is in our budget book, we have this as a Kemper Center donation. And on this paper here, it says it's a Kemper Center grant. Okay, we're granting them money. Now, is it a donation or is it a grant? I know I've been told on several accounts it's a donation, it's a grant, it's an allocation. What actually is it that we're giving to Kemper Center? Because with Kemper Center being a 501c3, if they're applying for a grant, are they applying for this money from the county over and over? These are questions that I've had that I feel like I still haven't really gotten an answer to. So if it is a grant and they're applying for it every year, is that open to other 501c3s to apply for this grant? Or if it's a donation, when a donation is given, it means like no questions asked. I give a donation and that's it. I don't get to say where it goes or how it's spent or whatever the case may be. If we're saying it's a donation and we're giving Kemper Center $100,000 a year, and if I've read right, in the contract that we have with Kemper Center, it says that they're going to give us an annual report every year to tell us where the funds have gone, and I've seen maybe one or two of them.
Well, I know I sent you operating statements for at least 10 or 15 years.
I got the audit reports, but yeah, not the annual reports. Is there an annual report that Kemper Center puts together? Are you using an audit report as the same thing as an annual report?
Oh, it is. An audit is an audit of their annual statement.
I just try to answer your questions
one at a time.
Yes.
The county has an agreement with Kemper, and I'm not the lawyer. We give them grant funds, $50,000 that they have to spend on capital.
So the CIP is a grant. The $50,000 that we're giving for the capital improvement is a grant.
Yes.
Okay. What is the $100,000?
It's the same thing. Only we don't have the ability to tell them they can't spend it on capital, but they can spend it on operations.
So they can spend it on operations.
Yes.
That's
there's $50,000 for capital and $50,000 for operations. $150,000 altogether.
I guess my question to you guys is, do you see this as a place that we can cut 5%? I know, Ray, we talked about it.
Yeah,
today.
So what my response to Jill when she asked me this morning was, there's hard costs in the budget where we look at specific line items that have to do with building maintenance or equipment and things like that, where you can actually quantify and come up with a number based on what you plan to do with that fund. These aren't that kind of costs. They're not budgeted that way. They're budgeted, I'm going to call them soft costs. So because it's to a third party, if you wanted to make a change to that, that's within the committee's purview. The executive put it together this way, consistent with kind of how it has been, but I'm not in a position to necessarily defend. They're going to use it specifically for this, and if we cut it by that amount, it's going to mean they can't do this. I don't have that kind of knowledge of their operation, so I don't know what the impact would be in that regard.
Supervisor, well,
I'd just like to piggyback on what Supervisor Gilmore is saying. With Kemper Center, from my understanding, especially in the first quarter of their year, their revenues are low. Can anybody substantiate that? They don't bring in a lot. Well, in my previous workings with them, I think they could probably do a better job bringing in some revenues. She mentioned one wedding a year extra. That's all it would take for maybe a 5% cut. I think they could probably do better than that. Just my opinion, working with them in the past. So I would support a 5% cut. For further discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate the comments of both supervisors to my right. To kind of help me understand the history here, and thank you for putting together this report. This is wonderful. There seemed to be a period here, 2000, 2001, 2002, and then we missed 2003, and then we get to this almost exclusively $100,000, a couple hundred fifties in there, mainly $100,000 subsidy every year.
speak as to what the volatility was about, you know, back then, where, you know, we were giving them 56 grand, then we went down to 36, went to 16, then 1 year we didn't give them anything, and then all of a sudden now it's been a, here's your 100 grand check. Can you speak to that possibly?
I can't.
No.
And the only thing I could add, Supervisor Bostrom, is that I don't know how much science went into any of this.
Okay.
I'm thinking it's a whole bunch more art than it is science.
Okay.
that's my thought.
And thank you for that, and I certainly understand why you cannot defend that number and why Kemper would need to have that number. So, you know, for the sake of, you know, I guess further discussion, I guess I'd be in support of, you know, 5% reduction. I don't see that 5% reduction should close the Kemper Center, not by any stretch. And, you know, if they really need that extra 5%, then I would want to see why. Tell me why. So those are my thoughts. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm just curious, $100,000 that came to the Kemper Center every year, you had mentioned that they use the vast majority of it for utilities. I've heard that they spend a lot of utilities. Is it, I haven't looked at any of the information that Supervisor Gilmore is referring to, so I don't know, but do they pretty much rely upon that $100,000 to make ends meet? Is that the...
Yes.
And so the $50,000 for capital is for them to use for improvements in the Kemper Center and et cetera, right? Not for basic use improvement. It's for a separate thing for improvements, right?
Yeah.
That has to be worked by the Congress or the bill.
Okay. So if they use close to all of that, then they wouldn't have, I mean, they're relying upon this $50,000 for any capital improvements. The rest is just for operating expenses.
You know, I wanted to speak specifically to that because I think either Matt or Mike can help me with this, but the elevator went down. And I think actually a number of supervisors are aware of that because there was an event maybe 2 weeks ago that they were finally able to get it repaired for. They paid for that out of that $50,000. So, is that correct?
I thought we were working for insurance. We worked for insurance. It's balance.
The balance of what wasn't covered by insurance because it had to do with the lightning strike. But there's what, $5,000 or $10,000 deductible on it. So there's still a substantial amount that comes out of their, you know, so it's not just for improvements, it's for repairs to the facility as well. I guess is the point I must have made. Capital repairs to the facility.
Is it ready to pull?
Yeah. I'm curious, how long is our contract with the Kemper Center nonprofit, you know, to run this facility? Does anybody know that?
2027.
Yeah, it's been another 10 years or something. So it's not like it's annual renewable or anything like that.
Sorry, Bill.
To speak to what Mr. Franco was asking in regards to the $100,000 and us assuming that they're using it for their heat, electric, gas, their free energy bill, per se. As a 501c3, that information is public knowledge. And you can call We Energies and find out exactly what that dollar amount that they're paying for.
Well, they'll tell you what it is.
It is. And it's not close to $100,000. So I suggest, you know, maybe someone from the county does call over and check up on them because it is not $100,000. And that information is open to anybody in the public that wants to check up on Kemper because it is a 501c3. It's public knowledge. So to answer your question, Ms. Pringle, that $100,000 is not going to the energy's home. It's not. Giving them a donation, we don't have say in where it goes and they can use it for what they're using it for. So I really want to press for this and hope that we can, like Supervisor Wimble said, I think they can do better. I think that we can ask Kemper Center for the 5% and ask them to hold two or three more events a year, do some more business during the first half of their year,
I'm just curious as to what exactly the numbers are. I mean, I feel like I'm kind of guessing here. I haven't looked at anything. I don't know what their total revenue is and what their.
I've seen some of them.
For me to make a decision.
The information that we get from Kemper, I believe Jim has the annual audit type information that was provided to Supervisor Gilmore. That's as official, I guess, as it gets. Those are audited statements that they have to provide for their, to confirm 50. So he'll go get it.
I've been at a meeting where they show the utility bills. I don't think they hide it.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's hidden. I don't. Once Jim gets it, then we can.
I'm not making any type of accusations that they're hiding it or anything. May I speak to what Mr. Bothram had stated in regards to why we were giving them money and then all of a sudden it stopped?
Sure.
It was, at one point, it was taken out of the budget. And do you remember that, Chairman? Okay, so at one point it was taken out of the budget. And when I was reading through the information and really digging into this, I don't ever see where it got put back into the budget. And so that's another concern for me is where did it come in back into the facility's budget? Did the supervisor vote on it? Was it where was it put in? Can you speak to that?
Of course, it was politics. It was county executive, I believe, took it out, supervisor put it back in. And there's other times where it's about up or down where it was. Who was at a meeting like this? Where it occurred?
It's 2004 would have been, I'm assuming that was County Executive Keel at the time, in 2004.
Yes, I remember what you did. The remodeling time was one of
them. Okay. Well, we had a big cost there because we had to put in a fire system, which was a really big expense. But wasn't there a study done to you about if the rotary was out and it was run by the county control league, what the cost was? I think they kind of looked at that perspective and they decided that this is a lot cheaper in the long run to have it this way. We don't control the catering or the weddings or anything like that. But if the county owned it completely and had nobody else running it, the overhead is number one, I was told, was three maintenance people on staff totally, all the time, plus anybody else, just to keep the place in running condition. So,
Joe? In 2014, I don't have the 2015 report yet. The utilities was almost $75,000. The telephone was another $5,000. Insurance was $13,000. The total expenses before depreciation were $771,000. We get this audit report every year after their auditors review their financial statements.
That's what they spent.
That's what they spent.
Yeah.
In a year.
That's why we have found it better to have someone, just like we have with our nature center, Pringle, doing it than have us.
So their expenses are way over what we're giving them.
Right, there are the balances with the revenue that they.
Way over.
Yeah, they have the.
So do we have a motion to do this 5%?
I'm going
to
make a motion that we take 5% from this Kemper Center donation.
Oh, sorry. The 150?
Yes.
Capital?
Both
combined with the. Okay. Moved and seconded to.
I just want to make sure I understand the motion. The motion is 5% from capital and this 100,000?
A combination of the two.
Okay.
Which would be about, it would be $7,900.
All right, so I'm going to make a comment.
I wasn't done yet.
Oh, okay.
We've been moving second to, second was by Supervisor Quayle to remove 5% from the Kemper's total budget.
could support at least putting Kemper Center on notice for this $100,000 that goes into whatever they want to spend on, reducing that by 5%. I cannot support reducing the capital improvements because, as I'm sure many people here know, a building that size, that old, I'm surprised we're not dumping $500,000 into it every year, quite honestly. So I appreciate and understand what you guys are, what you want to do, and I support a portion of it. Combined, I cannot.
May I say? Mr. Chairman, may I say something?
Yes.
To speak to what you're saying, I totally get it. I know that they need, you know, new fencing. I know they need blacktop. I know they need all of that. But when they need that type of thing, they come to the county. And if you look at this budget here on page, or this expenses here on page 6, when they need that extra money for CIP, they're getting it. They've got a bike path, a roof, pier, parking lot. So if they needed extra money, they would be coming to the county to get it. If you look here, they just had $804,391 for a parking lot. So for us to say 5% from the combination of them, that is just not unrealistic to ask for that. If they need more money, they're not afraid to ask for it.
Sure. Yeah, and I just, again, want to reiterate, I think certainly get where you're coming from. If there's capital projects that are absolutely necessary to protect the building and the grounds, such as parking lots or roofs, and those I view as projects that, you know, happen once every, you know, 20 to 30 years. Those are special events. Again, I don't know enough about the inner workings of how the building has been maintained over the course of however long we've been a partner, we've been an owner of this building. But $50,000 for maintenance on a building that size is nothing. It's peanuts. And I spent 6 years of my automatic life fighting for saving and preserving historical structure of the Southport Beach House. I'm not going to go back on that. What I think is important to preserving a structure that I think really needs to be preserved. Now, if we're talking about operating budgets and stuff that we can't control expenses, I'm all on board for that. Capital improvements, hands off of me.
Sergeant Gilmore?
To speak to that, Supervisor Rostro, in regards to them getting, you know, the $50,000 from us, they are also inquiring and applying for grants through the state and the federal government to give them money for the historical preservation of that building. You can look at their 501c3 paperwork and see that they are getting large amounts of money for their capital improvement projects to that building. I agree with you 100%. I am all for the historical preservation for the next generation, but not on the backs of our taxpayers. And we are not a bank.
Any further discussion? A lot of motion. There wasn't ever a better one. On the motion,
I did it.
Pardon?
Did you get a second?
No, they didn't.
Okay.
On the motion to cut 5% from the total Kemper Center expenditures of this budget, 5% of $150,000. Your governance?
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
Society that has been 128.
Yeah, I honestly don't know the reasoning behind why that one was bumped up. It's, again, it's one of those kinds of things. Oh, Supervisor Rowe Davis.
Because Jim put me on that struggle, stuck as a sign. We have just like we had a transition area with the parks, we're having a transition. It's a one-time shot. It's not permanent. It's just for this budget year coming up. To transition the person that was way in there who was an intern, Carthage were hired to be mentored by the director rather than us look for another director to spend any money doing the search nationwide or anything like that. Had a conversation with Jim, and he put it in there for that purpose only. It's kind of type thing. It's just to have him be on full time, working, shadowing Don Shepherd. He's going to be retiring.
So if that may also kind of ask a follow up question, if I understand you right, Society is hiring this person that was an intern is now going to be moving into that position.
Yep.
And so the extra 10 grand is to compensate the person who's retiring.
The person coming in.
Or the person coming in to right. Learn the job before they get the job.
They're both going to be there at the same time.
Well, it's the same time for a period of time. And
got it.
It could be 6 months or it could be the whole year. We don't know yet. Just to help tide us over for that portion of time, the year, just like we think it'll happen in 6 months.
That's really interesting. Thank you.
All right, Jim, good.
So, can we revisit the Kemper Center thing for a minute?
Sure.
What I'd like to do, if it's proper, is to make a motion that we cut 5% then from the Kemper Center donation of the $100,000. Put that back on the floor.
I'll second the motion.
I'm going to second it to make a 5% cut from the $100,000 donation to Kemper. That'd be the capital $50,000 tax. Any discussion?
I see that where that might be easier to sell, but it just seems kind of a symbolic amount. It doesn't seem like it's going to make that much of a difference. If you want to save the money, do it another year. I don't know that this is the place, but maybe it's just me.
Are you considering cutting the whole thing?
No, not at all.
Rather well.
Well, to that point, in my world, I'm in law enforcement. I preach this all the time to people that small things matter. This, to your point, is one of those things. It's a start. It may be, like I said earlier, Kemper Center, the revenue in the early part of the year, the first quarter especially, is very low. Maybe it lights a fire that they can do more. I've had other dealings with them that I'm not going to go into right now where I think they could have done a better job. I think maybe this is a start. Maybe it's not. It's not a lot of money, like to your point, but maybe it's enough to say, hey, let's start to do a little bit better. And if it turns out that we're wrong or I'm wrong, we can always put it back in the next year.
I don't think anyone's wrong. I appreciate your point. The only thing I'm thinking about is when he said that they were spending $770,000 a month.
A year.
I'm not looking at their books. I don't know what they're spending it on, how they're, you may be right. They could be making more revenue in other areas. I don't know the entire situation. But it just seems like they really need the money here.
Or they need to work harder.
Or a combination of both.
Okay.
I take your point. I don't know cutting is necessarily. I mean, maybe what they need is to do precisely that.
Well, it seems like it was a controversy we had this year with Kemper Center, this 5% cut placed them on notice that you need to loosen some of your policies and get some more people in there and make sure you have some more business there. Maybe that would be a good thing.
Let's kind of go into that issue too. And maybe that's just a way of saying to them that we're providing you $100,000. We need a lot of backlash. We can't control the day-to-day operations. We don't. And we think that maybe it's time to shake it up. Maybe there's things you need to do. And if you don't shake it up, maybe the next budget will even be a bigger cut. This might be a wake-up call.
Any other discussion? If not, on the motion, I'll do the difference.
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried.
Okay, Jim. Okay. Anything else on parks? If not, I'll move along to golf. Golf is on page 5 of your packet. Golf is a non-levy item that's been self-supporting. It's turned a profit or a positive cash surplus, I should say, for 3 or 4 or 5 years in a row. We are budgeting it to break even. That's our mandate every year. Salaries are increasing. We reclassed a seasonal employee to a clubhouse manager, making him full-time. And also on the temporary salaries, we had to, similar to parks, we raised the hourly wages for these seasonal folks to get them closer to market because we've had a lot of turnover or even hard to fill these positions. Medical insurance is up. Again, it's just because of people changes. One, this person moving from temporary up to salary, he now is eligible for benefits. Concession stock is just an increase in the cost of inventory. And the expense accounts, we increase them. There's ongoing increasing costs of maintaining grounds and equipment based on history. Supervisor Gilmore had asked a couple of specific questions. Number one was about the other operating expenses, which went up. What's mostly in there is fertilizer and chemicals to treat the grounds. The majority of that expense is that. So we have an increase in that, just anticipating that it'll cost more next year to do that than it did this year.
So that whole line item is chemical?
None of that is capital.
No chemicals, sorry.
Most of it is, yeah. How much of the end you say that is chemicals?
Even the labor force? Yeah. Chemicals for maintaining that force are very expensive.
And you're anticipating a $40,000 increase?
There's other things that go in there, but yeah, as far as chemical prices going up, we are anticipating an increase, yes.
The other specific question you had was about advertising. And Dan said he could tell you a little bit about what they're doing in their marketing plan.
Out of there comes all of our marketing for all 63 holes in both facilities. So it's $30,000, which is 1% of our revenues, or a little bit more than that, 1.25%. We normally do the golf shows in Milwaukee and Chicago. Those come out of there. Marketing plan with Digital Alchemy, which is we do geofencing around certain areas so that when people pull up their cell phones, that Bright Hill or Fine Springs ad will come right up to them. We do
marketing, when you go to your website and you once visited the golf website or right now at Frank Springs, it'll keep popping up over in the left-hand part of your screen or the right-hand part of your screen saying, you know, come to Brightdale, come to Frank Springs and play. All of our newspaper advertising is in there. All of our magazine advertising is in there. Everything that we do to promote both of the facilities comes out of that advertising account.
And I wanted to talk just a bit to the chemical thing. Just to put it in perspective, to reseed one green, average size green, Dan, what are we talking about?
It depends on the type of seed that you put in. A creeping bed like we use, I don't have the exact figure of what it is to reseed it, but I know like a forpithium, you know, when it's a disease. We've had some hot human weather in the past, and it's like $2,500 for four, not even a gallon bottles. They're 105 ounces. And to treat the golf course, just the greens, it takes, you know, like $12,500 if we get into that situation where we have high humidities and high temperatures, especially at night. You know, just to treat it one time, and it's good for about 10 days. So, and that's not a curative. It's too expensive for us to use it as a curative. That's just, or a preventative, that's just as a curative.
So what I learned about this was that that pythium, if it does get on the greens, if it's in the fairways, it's a problem. We need to nip it in the bud so it doesn't get on the greens. I remember a few years ago when we were working with Loman, I thought the cost to reseed green, not reconstruct it. Reconstructed is like $150,000 to $200,000, one green. But to reseed it, and Mr. Chairman might have some insight into that, I believe that's still in the $10,000 to $20,000 range for one green to reseed it if pythium, which hot humid like we had in August this year, which it seems like we get more of that tropical weather, once that pythium starts, Dan would come in after a weekend, he'd report to me like, yeah, we used another 10 grand worth of chemicals to treat the pythium. And when that humid weather wouldn't break, it's like, I know it keeps going then. It doesn't go until the weather breaks. And if you don't stay on top of that, you can lose. If you lose a green, that particular nine holes is out of business because it's so, and we can't afford to use it as a preventative. So we only, as soon as it turns up, we hit it hard to try to control it. So that's, and that's just one thing, but it's one of the ones that I know can be devastating. So that, trying to provide some insight into what we do with that.
And if it does get in the fairways, you can pick it up on your spikes, and as soon as you can carry it on your spike onto the green,
the spores.
So, and then it can travel from green to green to green, and so then it can spread all over.
The last green I built, I have built them for some of my wealthier customers. The last one I built, the seating was about $90,000. The grass portion.
It's an expensive project. You want to avoid it at all costs.
These greens, which can happen in 5, 6, 8, because we don't have to spread away. You have to have these chemicals readily available.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Two comments. And thank you for putting together the historical average here. This gives me a little frame of reference of where we're ending up this year as it relates to last year's, or years of the past. It strikes me that this year just seemed weather-wise was spectacular, but yet we're kind of in the middle of the road with revenues. And is that just a perception? I mean, was there awful weather early on that I'm just not recalling?
Or? Yeah, I can. It totally parallels my business. Spring was cold and damp, and the thing that kills the golf industry, which doesn't kill mine, is the weekends were very poor. So when we do a weekend at Pat's and Brightdale and we lose them, it's about $35,000.
Okay.
And now we've had some decent weekends, but again, here in September and October, we've had some rainy, crap weekends. And it is, with the two golf courses, if you lose a weekend, it's about $35,000.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My next comment, And I've never run numbers on golf courses, but part of my business, I've run numbers on other retail operations. I'm just, again, kind of guessing here. Green fees versus concessions. If this was a private golf course, I would suspect the concessions would be sharply higher, significantly higher.
Concessions are $500,000. Green fees is the rest.
No, I mean, but my point is that if this was a private golf course and not a municipally run golf course, I would think that the concessions portion of it would be much higher than...
If you're running banquet halls and stuff like a Bristol Oaks would or Redmond Twin Lakes or Micro Maple Crest, then that would be the fact. But we don't really do much of that. They might have something after an outing where they'll have people hang around. But
I guess my reason for mentioning that is that are there other opportunities for increasing concessions, or are there other revenue generating opportunities that kind of go along with golf, but
We've tried that repeatedly. The last effort was last year and the year before. I fought cat and dog to get beer to be sold on these golf courses, and nobody wanted us to do that. Private competitors sure didn't want it, and the history of it was there just wasn't beer sold. But I finally got it through, and that first year we did $75,000 in beer sales. County said, well, maybe we should, that worked. This was years ago. Now, we as a county cannot hold a Class A liquor license. So we went out to bids the last 2 years. We were trying to find a vendor that would take over our concessions. Because we have lost leagues. We have had people that would like to get married out there. People want to have cocktail, right? They don't just want to have a beer and a beer wine. We couldn't get bids. We courted. We finally had a pretty big operator out of Chicago that owns some of the areas of things around Wrigleyville. That owns a place in Silver Lake, and he was hot to do it, and he didn't turn in a bid. That was his.
Okay.
So we have tried, and this discussion has gone, and there's been big pushback from the private industry.
Oh,
I'm not sure. It's political. We couldn't get it. We thought, with this software we got, we thought, okay, right, well, we'll get somebody in Brighton that wants to do it. Like Jenny's that already has a liquor license. There's a whole lot to that business that a lot of these people just don't want to get involved in. So we thought if we had somebody that's already in that type of thing, we got no interest. Zero. We had people picked up the stuff and look at it. Wasn't our money in it for. But I don't know, Ray, we do have something fairly exciting coming up here. And I don't know if that's been unveiled yet. We're talking about. So
we're waiting for a formal proposal.
So we'll wait.
Yeah, because we haven't gotten it from them yet.
But we've got.
Well, thank you for the teaser.
I'll just say it's fashioned after something that occurs in Milwaukee. And it involves big glasses.
Okay. Well, thank you for the comments, and thank you for answering the questions. I guess at the bare minimum, I'm glad to see that we're constantly thinking outside the box and trying to make things better. That's really kind of what I was looking for. So.
And I really haven't given up on that, but we just don't know where to turn anymore. We've tried, how go out and request for a proposal and get nothing.
Yeah.
I'll just give you a little bit more background. We had been through the second season that the county wanted to have some type of vendor come in and provide service to either Pets, Brightondale, both, Midwood. And when the RFQ went out, it was written fairly strictly, basically got not much of a response. So the second year loosened up a little bit, made it much easier for an operator to come in. And there was some interest, people got papers, and one or two came back. Took a look at them, they really weren't qualified to do what we needed to do. The third year, we said, okay, this is a mix and match. You can have all the beverage, you can have all the food, you can just do the beverage and we'll keep the beer and wine. Any way you want to do it, it's an open field. Pick both locations, pick one location. What can you give us? And again, as Dennis said, very, very limited response. It's just a type of, and you can can see why. It's a seasonal thing. The person is going to operate for 3-4 months out of the year, get college kids, maybe not. That's about the rate. Try to make a go of it. And with the uncertainties of the weather, as we're well aware of, managing golf courses, it's just we're trying to.
But there definitely is more money.
Summary in there just of what their revenues have been for the last 5, 6, 7 years. Capital. We've got a couple pieces of equipment there. Utility vehicle, a sprayer. There's 3 or 4 different types of mowers in there. That's our regular equipment rotation. There's 1 or 2 at Betson, 1 or 2 at Breakdown. And then there's $200,000 in there for golf course irrigation and restoration activities, putting in either irrigation where it's needed, or there's a move to maybe get rid of some of the sand traps. There's a lot of sand traps out there that we either have to fix, which is very expensive, or close up, which is less expensive, and ongoing maintenance is much cheaper. And we're going to fund this $280,000 of that $440,000 out of reserves. There's been a budget mod, or a budget in the budget language, to take some of the money that golf has made over the last few years and put it as a reserve. Now, we didn't spend all that money. This is just a small part of what we put away in the last few years. So the bonding for golf will just be $160,000, mainly for the more equipment, the more rotation. Again, no levy. I'm fairly confident we're going to make some money this year. It has been a pretty decent year, not as good as last year, which was really good. We were selling golf in December of last year, and we were selling golf in March of last year. It's not happening this year, but it's still a good year. That's a tough year to beat. And so for next year's budget, we just kind of put it in an average of about $2.9 million, because we've been at $2.7, $2.8, $3 million. And it's up to these guys to manage this business to not lose money. So if it comes to the end of the year and it hasn't been a good year, they have to not use the chemicals, or they have to not bring on the people. And they've been doing a good job the last few years of doing that. So that's golf.
Any other questions on golf?
Expenses are in the highway department. Out of their $9 million of expenses, 2/3 of it is in personnel-related expenses. Someone had asked me about the supplies. Well, there was a couple questions. One was about the other contracted services that went from 150, I'm just remembering this, 150 to 175. This year we put in a new GPS system, and there was maintenance this year and next year that we didn't have before. It was 25 or 30,000. So that's the main reason why that went up. The other amount is just pavement marking. We hire that out, and it all goes into this account. That's about $150,000. The other question, I'll just kind of run through these. Vacation, we talked about salaries, vacation, ANS, casual pay, they're just increasing based on our actual experience. Medical insurance is up because of different people taking different kind of insurance. Other operating supplies, those expenses go up. That's where we put our hot mix and other expenses that we incur, and then we turn around and bill them back. I decreased the building insurance for the building. Here's this is going to go down. There's a decrease in the planning costs for the highway building. Thank you, Barna, for that. We decreased the gasoline and diesel expense. We had it since the price of gas has really gone down, and we expect it to be level for next year. We decreased that amount compared to, in 2017 compared to what we had budgeted for 2016. We probably will not hit our 2016 budgeted level. And fixed expenses are flat. On the revenue side,
I just want to talk a little bit about personnel, because in that first line item, there are a couple of components that aren't obvious, but I think the committee should be aware of them. One of them is that reclasses, and maybe we'll talk about that later, but within the highway department structure, currently there's the director, Gary, assistant director, Clement, and then we've got a senior transportation engineer that is Ron, which most of you probably haven't met him. Those three positions, what we did, when we originally brought the assistant position on board, the plan was at the time was that when Gary retired, the person that was the assistant would move into that position, and then that position would go away. And that's exactly what we did in Matt's case, because the park structure is, given what's going on there, that worked perfectly fine. John retired, Matt moved into that position, and the assistant director position is not funded in this year's budget. Within the highway department, though, given the number of projects that are literally exploding and we don't anticipate that to slow down, what we did is we looked at those three positions, the director, the assistant director, and the transportation engineer, and we made the decision this year that we really came to the kind of realization that given everything that's going on, we can't eliminate those. We need to maintain those three positions, but there is a more cost-effective way to go about it. So when Gary does retire, the plan will be that Clement moves into that position as director. Clement's old position of assistant director, it's in the budget to reclassify that as senior transportation engineer. So it would basically take Ron, move him into that position. But Ron's position of transportation engineer would get reclassified downward to like a civil engineer one or something equivalent, a position that we don't currently have, but basically a trainee, somebody that would come in very young, probably, if not fresh out of school, not long thereafter, that we could then, the plan would be that Ron would supervise that individual. He's a very seasoned traffic engineer, and we develop more in-house capability to manage these projects more effectively. Right now, Gary is spread between projects and operations to a point where he'll tell you he really hasn't been able to keep up with everything. Having Clement here this year has really opened our eyes to the point that we really start to separate out and have the projects primarily managed by the transportation person and Clement primarily focused on operations, also involved in all the projects, but primary responsibility on the operations side. It'll be a much more effective way to run the department, and it'll ultimately be cost us less than it does currently, given the way that things are being reclassed. So that's one thing I wanted to make the committee aware of. And the second thing is it's noted in there, it says salaries increase in headcount to four positions, two unfunded, as Jim earlier explained, and then revision of wage schedules to match the market. What we did, given some of the recruitment efforts we saw we had to do this year and were less than successful, given what our starting wages were, when Act 10, just again to give a little bit of background, when Act 10 went into effect, we substantially cut our starting wages in the highway department. Probably too deeply. And the adjustments made last year as part of the classification and compensation study that looked at the highway department. Made some adjustments, but I can tell you that based on what's happened in the past 12 months or 14 months since that study was done, wages have inflated dramatically for, I'm going to say, construction trades type folks, exactly the kind of guys that we want in the highway department. And what we've done is we proposed in here a wage structure that will take and pull up that bottom end of that structure. But what we had in place last year was when a person that was in that lower level, and actually if they were in the higher level, and I'll explain a little bit, hopefully not confusing everybody, we still have a core group of guys that are left over from the old union days that had were topped out at roughly $27 an hour and change. That was above the marketplace, but that's where those guys were. Those guys weren't cut. They were just red circled at that point, so they couldn't get any other increase. Well, all these new guys, which now the demographics of the department since Act 10 have changed pretty radically. We've only got, I think it's 15 guys left of the old $27 and change. The bulk, 45-ish, are hired as new under the new wage scale. So costs have come down dramatically, like I say, to a point where when we went out to recruit this year, we weren't able. Guys turned us down. So, well, I can't leave my job for that. So we re-looked at it in conjunction with the personnel department. We made an adjustment, so we pulled those lower guys up. One piece that was in place last year was that was available to everybody, lower-end guys and higher-end guys, if they performed certain kinds of work, skilled trades, heavy equipment operation, or working up on the interstate, there was a differential that was paid for that. It was $5 an hour for interstate work and $7 an hour for heavy equipment work,
if I have that right.
And what we looked at, that was not working well. It was very difficult to administer. There was all kinds of issues with administering that. We've cut that way back. That's about $1.50 an hour is what we brought that down to, that differential. And we used that money to bring up the lower end of the guys that were. So our starting wage now, I think, is in the
1849 or something like that.
So we brought it up from, what, do you remember?
It originally started at 15.
And it's now, under this proposal?
Around 20.
So I think it's just under 20.
Just under 20.
So our starting wage should be more competitive, so we should be able to recruit and retain the guys that we've had that are newer hires. And by the same token, that differential for skilled trades is going to be easier to manage now. So we did all of that in a revenue-neutral, expense-neutral kind of a way. So that's why you see there isn't any impact to the budget, because we took monies that were allocated for that already and just kind of redistributed it in a way, working with the personnel department. I just wanted the committee to be aware of that, because it's probably going to come up with the Finance and Administration Committee, so I didn't want you guys to hear it there for the first time. So that's in there as well. So I just wanted to make everybody aware of that.
And the reason that didn't work real well, the plan that tried last year is that the experienced people wanted it all up. So it went to where it really wasn't supposed to, but they took those jobs, and so then it was adversely affecting the difference between the new guys and them. So there's going to be an angry group,
yeah.
But there's going to be a much happier core group now that is going to be the core.
Right, that's the future of the department.
Future core.
Just a couple little factoids that are important. In addition to the price of gas, which is a big number for us on the expense side, and the payroll, the cost of salt in this year's budget is almost $64 a ton. Next year it's going down to $62 a ton. So we'll save some money on salt. And the cost of asphalt, which we don't have the price for next year yet, but in 15, there's binder, there's surface asphalt or binder and then surface asphalt. The binder was $43, and then the surface was $45. They're each going down about $1 this year. So we're saving money, gas and asphalt and asphalt.
you wouldn't have to ask me that. I can tell you how many tons of salt.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
I can find that out, though.
I'm just curious. Wait,
do you know?
Yeah. We'll find it on our own. Send out an email just so you know.
Farmable. And so, and thank you for that. Yeah, not just gas, but diesel. Just
gas.
Fuel.
Salt, we know, right? Salt.
Yes, and no salt. It averages about 7,500 tons per year, but it obviously varies greatly depending on conditions.
A couple years ago, when it was real bad, when we used 13,000, almost 14,000 tons, double. That's the year when a lot of people couldn't find salt. We found salt, but a lot of people couldn't find it. But anyway, I thought you might want to know those two numbers. The other really important number is the historical levy there. We put it in. Historical levy's been going down every year. I've been around here anyway. 2013 it was 2.4 million, and next year we're budgeting it to be about 1.7 million. The next page we're going to talk about projects, and that's where the real meat of highway is. We'll probably have more work than we could do. There's one number here, it's the last number, the transportation infrastructure improvements number. That's our paving, where we do to pave our highways.
County.
Our county highways. And we try to do at least 13 to 14, but we'll probably exceed that next year. And in the back of the budget book, when you look at pages, the whole CIP section, there's a couple pages where the highway department goes in and they, every year they go out and analyze and drive around and look at the 260 miles of highways and do an analysis of which ones need to be done. And they have a very specific rating system of what roads need to get done. So you can read that at your leisure, but we're going to spend close to $1.8 million just on our county. That's a fairly typical number too. It's about our average. But to get back to page 7, where we list all the various projects, what we have here is the amount of expense and then any revenue that would come back to the county from either the state or the Fed or any, I don't think there's, is there any real grant money in here? It's all federal or state money, right? So the cost of the expense for all of the road projects will be $9.6 million, but we'll get back $3.1 in revenues, leaving a bonding amount of $6.5 million. And there's some fairly large, significant projects in here. I'm going to talk specifically about Highway S. Over the next 5 years, we'll be redoing Highway S all the way from 31 to I-94. That's a big project.
So the $1.2 million that we're looking at for that in 2017, what's that going to cover? All engineer, no property deposition.
Yes, I want to make sure, is that two areas? Is there any property acquisition right-of-way purchase next year, or is it all
yes.
Okay.
That begins next year. It begins in 2017. The engineering phase will continue. But the property acquisition will begin and happen concurrently with the engineering.
So that's all I really have to
talk about the capital?
Yeah, page 7.
Question on this is one ton trucks. In the budget book it said one ton truck. So when you have this list, if you had the number of trucks you were buying, it would maybe help us understand the cost of individual trucks. Instead of, I don't know what the cost of these trucks are, it's not 170,000 for one.
That's horrible.
Well,
okay.
Fancy one.
It's for one ton trucks.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't. I don't think it usually shows up in the budget anywhere. Where it says four trucks.
It does in the detail, yeah.
It just didn't make sure.
On the summary thing.
I'm paying
what
they're
for.
It's in there.
It says quantity four.
And I want the budget book it says for on this piece of paper we forgot to type that for.
And I'd like to touch base on one-ton trucks specifically just for a second. So it's one of the things that we went up. I talked with Supervisor Gilmore this morning about. She'd asked some questions. So what we've done for one-ton trucks, so typically in facilities or parks, golf, one-ton trucks tend to rot out before they wear out. You know, we don't put a lot of miles on them. They're used in the parks, so they don't end up with a lot of miles. They still are at work, but they tend to rot out before they wear out. Whereas in highways, where we run these things hard. So I think we're typically turning in, we'll trade in a one-ton vehicle that's used in highways somewhere between 300,000 and 400,000 miles.
Yeah, at least 300,000.
So somewhere in that range. So what we've done this year is those we were going to replace two, and there was two trucks acquired. I think they're in golf. I can't remember which departments they were. I think it was golf and maybe parks. What we decided to do was retire two trucks a little bit earlier. Maybe they're not going to have 200,000 miles or around 200,000 miles. Repurpose those vehicles into those departments that don't put a lot of miles on them and they tend to rot out before they wear out, and then get the new ones in the highway department. So we're putting that program formally in place. It's a better utilization of the resources that we've got, and it should work out for everybody in a much better way. But because Supervisor O'Day asked about one tons, I wanted to make that note. Yes, so there isn't a change in the headcount for administration.
Okay.
It's just a reclassification of those.
Instead of dropping that person off,
it's the same as it is for 16. Yeah, it's
so
one up from 15.
We don't really see it in the budget book, but we're just knowing that that's correct. Is that it?
Correct. And then I'll let Gary speak to some of that. So the trucks are always the easy target, because I think I told you the county executive, I think it took us three times that we had to go back to him and say, no, we really got to put these back in. They got cut out three times, and I think it was three times, and finally the third time the county exec agreed to leave them in. So I kind of put that just for context of how trucks get dealt with. And Gary can provide a little insight into some of the repairs and the types of things that go into the consideration of why it makes sense to replace these vehicles and get into a steady rotation so we don't get behind where now we're dumping hundreds of thousands of dollars in repairs to antiquated equipment.
Yeah, we do track the cost of operating every piece of equipment we have, including the trucks, and what we initially look at is when there's a trend for repairs to be high and kind of even or increase consistently over the years. But there's far more to our decision to replace trucks than just that cost for repairs. The trucks are used most importantly for winter services, although they are used throughout the year to haul asphalt for our paving operations, gravel for shouldering, that type of thing. So they're pretty much a year-round use vehicle now. We look at different things such as the root importance of where these trucks are working, and we look at things like that and the design elements of the roads to try to determine what type of vehicle works best, what type of attachments need to be on the truck to work most efficiently. We look at things like actually the age of the vehicle comes into play far more than even the mileage of a vehicle. And for example, for our dump trucks that we use for the winter and summer activities, we historically had replaced them at about a 12-year life. Over the years, that's been kind of getting pushed up higher and higher and higher, and right now it's over 15 years that we're on replacement, which is far greater than our comfort level is. They're expensive. I mean, you know, they're $200,000 to $250,000 for a truck, and they're a prime target when it comes to wanting to cut costs. And this year was no different. But we are behind. And for example, I think it's the tandem truck. We're replacing one. There's four that are over 15 years old right now. So what we're faced with is the consequences of not having those trucks, and it goes across the board for all of our equipment. And the consequences to the public are just far too great, because we don't have backup trucks. When a truck goes down in the winter, someone else has to pick up that work, and our winter maintenance program is not designed to have backup vehicles and backup people. If something goes down, another person has to double their work. And the consequences to the public's expectations are increasing all the time, and the support that we need to provide to the businesses in Kenosha County has dramatically increased. You have to look no further than the type of buildings that are going up all along I-94 and throughout the county, not just along the interstates. Those businesses operate 24/7. Doesn't matter if it's snowing. It doesn't matter weather conditions. They need to operate, and we are expected to provide those services to support them. So, based on all those considerations, it's almost a bit of a more of an art than a science to determine the replacements of these vehicles, and we depend greatly on our staff, our entire maintenance staff. We have six mechanics and two people that support all the repairs and the maintenance. So we operations people and the repair maintenance people get together and determine a priority. That's a little long-winded explanation, but I'd be happy to have any specific questions.
Well, thank you for that answer. I really do appreciate your thorough explanation in regards to these trucks and the equipment that you need, and I just want to take a minute just to commend you for always having a logical, a safe answer, and I thank you for explaining that, because even after talking to Ray, I still had a little bit of question in regards to...
I'm not that logical.
Right. Well, no, Gary, I've appreciated you for the last 6 months. You have been approachable. I've been able to get the answers to the questions I needed, and you just clarified a lot for me, so thank you for that.
About it, right?
That's all I really have for a highway.
Any questions for Jeff? Clement? Got any questions for Clement? With that, we have a motion to approve this portion.
So moved.
Motion by Supervisor Green.
Second.
Second by Supervisor Hope. All in favor, Kelly?
Aye.
Aye. Facilities
is on the page. numbers that are up here, really, hold on a second. This is a combination of a lot of different pages in your budget book. We actually have three different departments, facilities departments. One is called the Civic Center, which is downtown buildings like the courthouse, Long Arrow building, the administrative building, pre-trial building, that we call the Civic Center. We add together all the expenses related to facilities, custodians, and utilities for that bunch. We also separate out into another category the public safety building, because the public safety building, we can accumulate those expenses, and there's an intergovernmental agreement between Kenosha County and the city to cross-charge a portion of the expenses to pay for Supervisor Wambold's people and the joint services people, the police and the joint services, so we capture those expenses separately. Thank you for paying us for that, by the way. And then there's a third chunk of expenses in the job center, which we accumulate all those expenses because we are able to bill those back to the various clients that use the job center. So we have three chunks of money. Now, as far as we're really concerned, we kind of add them all together and budget them. In the budget book, you'll see these various clumps, but together they're added here because we can really move the money from one to another if we need to. Not the actual expenses because we have to track them that way, but from a budget perspective, we budget it all together. And then the next page is a whole bunch of facilities, capital expenses. So page eight, on the headcount, there's an increase in one of headcount, and it's a relief custodian for three-fourths of the year that we didn't have in 2016 that we're going to add for 2017. And that individual will help fill in for our building chiefs or our other, the way the pecking order works is we have, four building chiefs, and then we have relief chiefs, and then we have all the custodial staff. So we're adding one relief chief to help fill in for when either the relief people are gone or the chiefs are gone on vacations or whatever.
And I want to speak to that a little bit too, and it might maybe we'll fill in too, but basically what's happened is the demographics of the people that are in the building chief positions, let's say there's nobody that's a kid anymore, and it's resulted in fairly significant health things that have taken people out for extended periods of time. I can't obviously talk about specific people, but there's been any number of surgeries that are necessitated. Again, like I say, most of these folks are not kids. They're very experienced, highly knowledgeable about the buildings, excellent workers, but just physically are getting to a point where stuff's got to be replaced. And as that's happened, Mike has really had to scramble, use significant amounts of overtime, staff juggling, moving people. There was a time you may have even noticed at this building, if you pay attention to it closely, restrooms, floors, everything was looking pretty shoddy actually earlier this year because we were without a guy for about 2 months and kind of floated staff in and out from other buildings to try to cover it. But then there were people that were on extended due to either back surgeries, replacements, things like that. We're constantly floating people. We don't see that going away anytime soon. We see that the folks that are in these key positions are still going to be here for a while. This position really will give us the ability to not to cover those situations that appear to be pretty inevitable based on the last 3-4 years of experience. Yeah, on one hand I'm thinking, well, maybe they've had all their parts replaced, so we should be pretty good, but that isn't the case. So that's really why the push for this. In terms of a real scientific cost-benefit analysis, in terms of what overtime may be eliminated or liability reduced because we are able to keep up with maintenance functions as well as just cleanliness of things to create safe conditions for folks using the buildings, we didn't get into that scientific. I'm confident, though, that this position is going to be a cost-effective thing that's going to help us maintain the level of repair and safety in all of the facilities by having a person that's going to be function as that floater, going to be the pinch hitter, basically, wherever Mike needs that person, as opposed to trying to cobble together a plan today, and then based on something that happens 2 days from now, completely re-cobble a new plan together because of various health issues. They just appear to be inevitable, given, like I say, the demographics of our folks. So that's why it's in there. I was going to just ask Mike if you had anything to add to that.
I don't think I can say better than
Mike.
He said it very well. It is very, very good. It's surgeries.
And I think from a historical standpoint, Jim, we've...
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what page it's on. Probably around page 85 or 86 in your budget book, where it shows a historical comparison of facilities department headcount. And I know it was higher in prior years and it went down and really hit a low point for the 2016 budget. And now it's going back up one person for 2017. And the other thing that's happening in here, in 2016, they just completed the wage and comp study for the janitorial staff. And they're similar to what they did for everybody, or not everybody, but for the office staff and salary personnel, the exempt personnel. They completed that study, so next year there's going to be some wage increases in the budget for custodial staff.
That's a key point. I'm glad you forgot. Our starting wage for custodians was $11.97 an hour, $11.92, something like that. And Mike had constant turnover, and the quality of folks that we're getting, obviously, at that level, even though we've got a solid benefit package, at that level, very difficult. I believe the starting wage is close to $15 an hour now as a result of the classification and compensation study. And we feel real comfortable that that's going to stabilize things, too, that we should be able to get somebody, again, combined with the benefit package at $15-ish dollars an hour, we should be able to get stable folks in those entry-level positions and stabilize his workforce, which has not been the case the last few years. So that's woven into those numbers as well.
Commander Pulley, any questions?
Yes, I did. That was one thing I noticed when looking at the Racine County budget. We had... 30 in our facilities in public works, and they had 13. Did you know any reason for that disparity there?
I'm not 100% sure, but I believe they are heavily involved in contract. They contract out for a lot of their custodial services. I don't know. I know that there's, I can't think of the name of it, but there's one company that they contract. So I assume they probably have their key people, probably their building chief is probably still a staff person, a county person, but then the majority of the worker bees or lesser skilled folks are contracted out. So neither is the same kind of
thing. Have we considered anything like that?
I know that it was talked about post Act 10, and I don't recall how it shook out. I know we ended up saying obviously with what we got. And I believe some of the considerations had to do with stability of workforce and, I think, confidentiality aspect of the law enforcement. I don't believe, and I'm going strictly on memory, which is not only not logical, but kind of fuzzy. I'm thinking that there were some concerns on the Sheriff's Department, PSD, Kenosha Detention Center, pre-trial. Those three buildings, custodial staff in there on a contractual basis, they were less than thrilled with that kind of concept, not having our own folks that are fully vetted, and, you know, we have full control over. I believe the same concern was expressed by the judges. I'm not 100% sure of that, but Mike Shagan has said so he was here, so that those were why we did what we did as opposed to it. Racine actually did a lot of contracting out, some of which they've changed, because in the highway department they went with temporary seasonals too, and then they ran into a number of issues, as I understand it, and now they tried to kind of rebuild that. In the parks department too, I think they contracted out.
In the parks, they have four employees. They have a parks manager, and they have three chiefs, foremen. Everybody else was contracted out. Their golf courses, they completely contracted them out.
Long time. So it is philosophically a different place. Yeah.
And I can tell you, my experience with looking at, since I've been here in the county, we try to do a cost justification for contracting out all of the seasonal
Parks and Golf, and financially it didn't work. It cost more to do it on the outside than it did to do it ourselves. So contracting isn't always what it's cracked up to be, financial-wise as well as level of service-wise.
Just speaking from a small businessman, I don't see why they would give a county a break. If I do a temp, it costs me a lot.
Typically a 50% markup, sure, and then right, goes up from there depending on the level of position.
Thank you, Ray.
Yes, sir.
Now that Amazon is here, it costs all of us a lot.
Yep. Okay, going back to page 8, we talked about the increase in salaries. If you look up at the top of the little table there, personnel, the levy increase for our facilities is $108,000. Everybody else is really decreasing. The total every increase is $30,000 or $40,000 for the department. And all of that is really in the personnel area. With good reasons why we're increasing the personnel area that you just heard. Utilities, though, we're actually budgeting a small decrease from 16 to 17. Based on experience.
And energy reduction activities.
And building equipment maintenance, again, a small decrease. That's an account where we put outside contracted services that we have to hire people to come in. We actually think we'll save a little bit of money because if we can keep good staff and get the extra people in there, we should be able to do that work ourselves. Miscellaneous contractual services. Supervisor Wamble had and I think Supervisor Gilmore both had a discussion with Ray and I. That is an account where we put consulting services of a non-capital nature. This year we're doing some facilities training. We had a consultant come in to look at some building exteriors to check on some cracking that we had, or we thought we might have. And we did some tower consulting that goes into those there of a non-capital nature. 2017, we've got lean training, that's LEAN, which is project management and streamlining of processes and procedures. We'll again do some more maintenance or some more consulting with towers. The capital budget, you'll see we're actually going to replace one tower or build a new tower. We'll also have someone come in and do some HVAC consulting, similar to what we did 2 years ago with the roofs. We had a consultant come in for about $20,000. He looked at all of our roofs and gave us a beautiful plan of which ones were the worst, how we should replace them, what it'll cost us, which ones could be maintained. And we started this year, we replaced the roof over the county garage. Next year you'll see another capital expenditure for the roof over the highway office. Those were the two that the consultant thought were the worst. So we'll do a study on HVAC of that similar nature, and we might get around to something with our generators and some of our electrical equipment too. But that's where we put that. It's a big chunk of money. It's $60,000. This year we're going to spend $40,000. I think we've probably spent it all already.
I wanted to touch base just a little bit because Supervisor Skolitsky had mentioned it, the lean stuff. And I think the committee, I made you aware that we actually this year have a couple projects going on. One's in Mike's group with facilities that's about three quarters of the way through a very interesting project having to do with standardizing snow removal practices and procedures for all the facilities. Eye-opening experience in terms of how much is left on the table, the way when you kind of leave things for the chance. Brookside is the other area that's doing this on all their admissions. They're going through their entire admissions process because it literally touches every department in the facility. And they're about two-thirds of the way done with their project. The goal is to start to roll this out into, we want to get into highways, some parks, and basically start to make this an institutionalized kind of way that we do things in the county. And most of you that work in the private sector have already been exposed to this stuff in some form or fashion. Manufacturing is where it started, but it's now going into healthcare, any service industry, and government's starting to adopt it. So we're trying to push and kind of get out ahead of the curve on that stuff.
Yes. It might be easiest if you all have your budget book. Do you want me just to finish the expenses, or do you want me to go right to this? Or like, well, I don't care. I'll talk about whatever you guys
want. Sure. Yeah. Let's finish this page.
All right. We have a one of the supervisors had asked me about the 530050 account, purchase of small tools. And I brought the list of detail if you folks want to see it. It's all the, I can't remember who was his supervisor, Gilmore, Lamble. Now we have these kind of detail sheets for all of our budgets. And this is a list, basically we interview the staff at budget time and ask them what they need to do their job. They come up with this list. These items that they have that they might need replaced. It's not really a wish list. It's more of a, you know, I've got an old lawnmowers and weed whackers and whatever else they need. So this is what's in that. And again, you can see the three different departments. And it all adds up to about $46,000. It's an increase over this year. I can't remember what this year's number was, 30-some thousand. Have that list. Building maintenance repairs, there's an increase just based on what historical experience. Building insurance is coming down a little bit, reduction in the plant costs. And to pay for some of these increases, parking structure revenues are going to go down a little bit. That's based on history. Traffic fines revenue, that's the facilities division gets back up piece of what the county collects for traffic fines. We don't get it all. It's divided up between different departments. This is the facilities portion.
Thank you for this machinery list. And I'm just curious, how much is a hand dryer? I'm talking about the thing that just
walks. It's a bunch of them.
Yeah, so I mean, you're not buying one for $2,400.
$400
each. Yeah. And that's what I.
Why the ones that are going in are those turbo models, if you've seen them in some of the buildings, because the old ones that were the, you know, you sit there for a half an hour and finally your hands are still damp. Now these are pretty efficient. The way Mike's got the electrician wire, our electrician wiring them, there's a couple different settings, and they pretty much, so they get used. They get used.
I'm at the bottom of page 8. I was just kind of going to touch on some of the revenues. There'll be an increase in the amount we bill back to the safety building, because that's a function of how much the expenses are. Then there's also a new item there called the lease revenue. And these buildings that we've been purchasing downtown over the last 2 years, that's a net amount between the what lease revenue we do collect, net of the expenses we pay to maintain those places. We didn't have any budget in 2016. 2017, we have $35,000.
Any questions on page 8? Go to page 9.
Since Supervisor Franco went to the bottom to the big number, that is on page there's a CIP section in your budget. And I just got to find the page.
It says 1546 and 107.
Yeah, it's a capital project, so it's on page either 108 or 109
of CIP.
That's the area just before your appendix.
It's 130 pages full of mind-numbing detail. Important mind-numbing detail. I'm looking at page 109. So law enforcement enhancements is a combination of five different items. The money which will be spent over the next 4 years. Medical examiner relocation, this is something that's been in the budget for the last couple of years, and when they built out the public safety building back in 2008 or 2010, they left the second floor empty, so now we're gonna relocate the medical examiner who currently is renting space in the hospital. Be relocated to this building. Their lease runs off 2018, so we have to build this out in 2017 and then move them in early 18. Ray, why don't you just talk about this, because you're much
I kind of kept the committee giving them tidbits of this over the last month or so. But yeah, basically, medical examiner relocation. I'll start kind of at the top of the and worked out. So second floor is actually going to get built out, as Jim said. That'll be all Sheriff's Department type activities. Since EOC, the emergency government function, is the sheriff's function now, that will be moving up there from the basement, and all the detective bureau will be moved into that area. So the whole second floor is going to get built out for EOC and detectives for the Sheriff's Department. On the first floor, probably the biggest, most radical move is that the entire fleet maintenance function for joint services will be moved out of the building to make adequate space for the medical examiner to move into the building. So basically the whole west end of the building where there's those 10 garage bays right now, that'll become the medical examiner's office. She'll be able to have her entire operation there in one-stop shop. So as opposed to now, part of it's at the job center and part of it's at the hospital, everything is there. Also on the first floor, there's going to be some remodeling that takes place in the Joint Services Administration area. It's going to give them some additional offices. There's going to be some remodeling in the evidence area. One big piece of what's going to take place in evidence is Joint Services has identified, I'm going to use the term automated type system to store and catalog all of the evidence. It'll basically allow them to use the same floor space but increase, and I don't know all the details about it, but it'll allow them to store a heck of a lot more stuff in the same amount of floor space by putting in an automated catalog type system. That's a $2 million project. The shooting range down in the basement, I can't remember if I've explained it to this committee or any number of folks, but the EOC that's currently in the basement, for those of you that are aware, it's in a fairly small space. What we're gonna do is take the extremely small workout room, move that into the EOC as the EOC goes up to the second floor, and then it's basically the whole north end of the basement will now become a slightly extended 15 to 25 feet, I don't remember the exact dimension, shooting range. So it'll allow law enforcement guys to use rifles in there with an entire new shooting range, and that's what that $500,000. That covers both the shooting range replacement of the bullet capturing structure, which we put recently, you know, we approved to put up a temporary curtain just to help out to manage things, provide an extra level of safety, but that was really just done as a band-aid to improve the current situation. But that whole thing is being looked at by the PD, the Sheriff's Department, and Joint Services to develop a complete replacement of that range. That $500,000 will cover that, as well as the isolated HVAC system that is part of that range, because it needs to not only deal with the environment in there, which is less than adequate right now, you're either freezing in the winter or you're sweating in the summer, but it also removes the lead particulates that are airborne in that area. So it's kind of a specialized system. $500,000 should cover what needs to take place for both the shooting range features as well as the HVAC. The Sheriff's Equipment Storage Building. That is the storage building out at KCDC that's been talked about for, I'm going to say, a decade or more. Basically, what will happen in that building, it will be storage for all the Sheriff's Department specialty vehicles, some of which are stored in the basement of the PSB, some of which are stored out here, some of which are stored, I'm thinking, at the Sheriff's Farm. It will basically take and centralize all those vehicles in one place. Additionally, that building will also house the function for vehicle investigation. So right now in the 10 bays that exist of Joint Services Fleet Maintenance, only about 5 of those bays are used for maintenance functions. The rest are either storage of stuff because they don't have enough room, and 2 of those bays are used for vehicle investigation activities. We're going to create that space out at the detention center for those vehicle investigation activities. The actual fleet maintenance function itself will move over to what we call the Badger Millwork building, that older building that we took possession of earlier this year. And after we did some analysis on the structure in that, it appears it does make sense to renovate that building. Structurally, it's sound. It's going to need significant renovation in order to do what's needed. The thought behind that project is that the building itself is old, structurally sound. If we make it a really solid fleet maintenance, joint services fleet maintenance garage, it has the height to accommodate the lifts. It's close to the safety building. It's literally 1.5 blocks away, depending on how you cut it. It's a solid location. It will be able to be modified to work very well for the fleet maintenance function. And the bottom line, we're not building a new building. It's an existing building. When we do the renovation, the HVAC, the roof, all those major pieces will have somewhere between a 15 to 20 year life. The thought was, who knows what's going to make sense to do on that block 15 to 20 years from now. If it makes sense for that thing to go away and something completely replace it, it's an old building that we got 15 plus years of life out of it. It's an easy decision to make if that needs to go away. If we were to construct a new building on that footprint or somewhere nearby, that probably is going to be a tougher decision for whoever's making those decisions 15 years out. So the thought is we're going to build it with the intent for it to have somewhere between a 15 to 20 year life. Set it up so that those guys can do their jobs much more efficiently than they can right now, given the heights that they can lift vehicles and the height of vehicles. So that's basically what that $1.8 million is for the Badger Millwork.
Question on that
specifically, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah,
what's the square footage of that building?
That off the top of my head is 10,000 plus when we add the mezzanine for storage. I think it's over 10,000, close to 11,000, versus where they're at right now is about 7,000 feet, 6,000 feet? 6,000.
I was just running a quick calculation, $163 a square foot to renovate.
Renovate, and that includes the equipment. Okay. So it's basically outfitted as a fully functioning maintenance shop. So it'll have the lifts, the hoists, all that stuff.
So theoretically, if we took the building down someday because we want to build something else there, all that equipment.
We could move that.
Thank you.
Sorry,
the
Just curious, when is this going to start?
We're actually doing the design work right now. Literally the last few weeks we've started to do the design work. We had money in the budget this year to cover that design work for the build out of the second floor and this build out. I mean, we didn't know this build out, but kind of that whole project, we had money budgeted this year for architectural work. So we're doing all the architectural work and engineering right now. The goal would be, if everything is passed, then these would be ready to bid end of December, January 1st. So that would have to be the first piece of that puzzle, is to do that, because we'd have to move Joint Services Fleet Maintenance out of there fairly quickly in order to accommodate the renovations that need to take place in there for the medical exam.
Thank you.
So that's basically the whole law enforcement enchilada.
Yeah, I'm sorry, one more question.
what exactly is going to take place in 2017? Just out of curiosity.
So 2017, we would plan on bidding all of the work associated with this. So when I say all of the work, the medical, all of the design, all of the renovation that we need to take place within the safety building, as well as Badger Millwork, as well as the detention center storage building. The design work for all that stuff should be done. I believe what we'd actually get done next year would be the Badger Millwork conversion to the Joint Services Fleet Maintenance. We'd probably get, I don't think we'll get the whole second floor done, built out next year. We're going to have to kind of space and sequence some of these things based on people moving and stuff going back in to renovate. So some of that other build out of the safety building will take place in 2017. Some of that will take place in 2018. The key thing we'll have to have done is we'll have to have space created and fully functional for the medical examiner so she can be out of there. I believe her contract's up in July of 18. So everything would kind of be sequenced to create, to spread things out from a cost standpoint and also address kind of the sequencing needed to program things, but it would take place over 17, 18.
Any more questions about that project? There's just a few other ones I'd like to touch base on. If you go up to, I'm still working on page 9, the top section underneath facilities, there's a few big projects towards the end there of that list. Highway Department fuel system, we have some money in the budget this year. It's ended up costing us more than what we thought it would, so we have to take the money from 2016, carry it over into 2017, add this $250 to finish up that project.
To start and finish
that project. The Civic Center development project, that $300,000 is to pay for any opportunities that might arise in the downtown area. There's a couple of new or additional buildings that have come up, people have approached us about. That would be to pay for those buildings. Renovation of courtrooms is something we started this year. There's $450,000 in 4 years to renovate four different courtrooms. We're starting with Milosavljevic and Bastianelli, I think, are the two that are going to be done first. Then there's $550,000 to replace the roof on KCC over the office area you're sitting under. So that was based on the recommendation of IRS, our roofing consultant. And I just say this year, we had $600,000 to do the highway garage, and Frank worked it out where he got this whole thing done for like $400,000, and we used $100,000. We kind of moved it to pay for other projects, and we'll take the other $100,000, roll it over to use for this project, and this is kind of a success story. We really timed the, we got all of our bidding stuff in on like 2 minutes after midnight on the 1st of January, so we were the first in line. We got 13 people to bid on it. We really saved a lot of money. So we're going to try to do the same with this project. So those are the large ones that are there. Underneath the public safety building, we're going to construct a new tower out near Katy Park. There are actually some holes in the communication system for all the public safety. Ray's much better at this, but I'm going to try it just in case. It'll cost $250,000 to construct that tower. The ones downtown are basically full. We put this one out here, it'll close the loop on the west end here for the communication. And then in a few years, we're going to replace another tower. It's not 17, it's further out in the budget. Where is that one tower or two towers in the future?
Two total. So I'll talk about that just a little bit, because there'll be a full report on that whole project. We're currently working on getting it ready for presentation to all the committees. It's probably going to have to go to Joint Services, our committee, probably Judiciary and Law, and the city as well. But basically, to boil down what's going on is there's a couple issues. One is that County Fire has not had countywide coverage with any of their communications network. It's a very basic kind of a system, and there's a lot of shortcomings. And if you talk to any of the county fire chiefs, which that's anybody from the Summers Fire Chief, Pleasant Prairie, Salem, Bristol, Paris, any of the Wheatland, any of them, they'll confirm. And there's a lot of dead spots in areas actually that are already being developed and continue to add more residential areas that there's no coverage right now. And so, without, like I said, getting into all the details, basically what this system would do, it would eliminate those areas. Within the city, also the KPD and the KFD have had to create a fairly sophisticated network of what they'll call spur sites that actually enable communication systems to deal, their communication systems to deal with a lot of dead spots on the east side of town, which are largely a result of Lake Michigan and kind of how it plays havoc. So it appears there's a system that would cover all of these issues and would put in place the infrastructure. Jim was saying the two towers would allow us to put in the infrastructure to basically eliminate all the issues associated with all public safety communications, voice communications. That's all this would deal with. There'll be a full report coming, like I say, probably in January. We're working on it. We just met with the Communications Committee, which is comprised of a bunch of county fire chiefs, KPD representatives, KFD representatives, Pleasant Prairie representatives, all the public safety folks and joint services folks. We've been working with a consultant for the past really 6 or 8 months to put together an analysis of what makes sense. And this is kind of the first step in that process. So it will be more comprehensive.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that. I look forward to the full report. Your addition of two towers, one west side, one east side of the city?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so go ahead.
Where would you put another tower in the city?
So in the city, we haven't identified the specific spot, but it could be in probably the area where the Badger Mill work, that block that we've started to get, as well as the block across the, just directly north of that, what we call the Viaduct parking lot.
Okay.
That, both of those would be close enough to proximity to the safety building and yet in a good spot to address all the issues along the coast. So anywhere in that neck of the woods would be a good spot for that tower
and,
on the east.
And so if it's going to be in that densely populated area, then it's not going to be really tall?
It would be a maximum of 200 feet, and it would be a monopole constructed tower, so it would be similar to the one on the north side of the safety building. If you ever look, it's fairly straightforward. Okay. It's a straight-up pole. It's not a lattice tower like the big one on 60th Street.
Sure, sure. Okay. Okay, thank you.
So these,
oh,
these
just getting back to the success we had with the here in the complex for the garage and so forth, I'm anticipating going out to really bid for this structure in here tonight. Are we looking at any other projects in 2017 where we can take advantage of contractors' eagerness to get things going? What other things are we looking at?
So there's a couple layers to that, because January 1st, the I'm blocking on the term right now, but
prevailing
wage law goes away. So there are certain projects that we're looking to do before December, only because we think there's going to be certain kinds of projects that a bunch of people are going to look to do right after that. And so we're trying to evaluate which ones make sense to do by year end and which ones are going to make sense to do pretty much right away January 1st. Because there is a number of projects that are in that, you know, not the millions of dollar range, but the hundreds of thousands of dollar range, which ones make sense to go. Bottom line is we want to get all of those projects, as many of them as we can, done before January and the January, so we can get early into the hopper and hopefully get the most competitive bids and get multiple bids for all the projects.
So the answer is you have a whole host of projects you're looking at to do in a similar fashion before 2017.
Yep.
And then this other thing you're looking at is fuel systems.
Yeah, we looked at both. Intuitively, we were thinking above ground, but based on what we went through with the consultant that we're working with, it appears the advantages of below ground still outweigh above ground in our situation. And I was a surprised.
It's surprising to believe
but
we have just recently adjacent to this building to look at soil conditions to say, you're again, you're in compliance.
I feel comfortable that the group will work and let these guys know what they're doing. And we're going to repurpose the existing tanks as part of the stormwater collection management system, I'm going to say, is as part of the plan right now. Not to take the old tanks out of the ground, but actually use them as part of that buffer for stormwater management. So.
Yeah, I was just going to say that when the county executive made his speech and he was talking about the three things, the two that we can control here or have are involved in is infrastructure, which is all the highway stuff, and the law enforcement. And you're seeing the big numbers here of what he was talking about. In the facilities area, just in total, in capital, there's a net there of $7.7 million. Highways got like $6.5 million. So that's 14.2 out of it. And the total capital budget this year is 18.9. It's a big number. And a lot of it is in infrastructure. And not all the facilities is in law enforcement, but a big, big chunk of it is related between the buildings and those towers and the other things we're spending.
And Gary's not here, but I know that one of the things that we'll talk about going forward is, you know, the new normal for infrastructure. We'll get S done. S is a huge project, largest road project the county's ever undertaken. But that's not going to be the end of it. There's going to be issues with H, there's going to be issues with K, there's going to be things based on, again, the demands of the businesses. All good stuff. We want to continue to bring more and more of that here, but infrastructure is going to continue to drive things for the next few years as we reap the benefits of being in the place that we're in geographically and more folks want to come here. So the new normal is what he's kind of been preaching to me, is that we just got to wrap our heads around that collectively.
And then
you
answered my question.
Just basically done.
Yes, sir.
No, you did wonderful, Dan.
Thanks.
I was hoping you'd get in a couple of the small ones.
If you'd like, I'd be happy.
Or controllers and things like that.
We can talk about replacing the ice machine.
You can handle that in private. If you've ever used one of those hand dryers, they are very loud. I had a guy at my big rose for my sister's 70th birthday party that holds the patents on every little thing that you wave your hand in front of that operates like that. He's an inventor.
He's probably doing okay.
He's doing just fine.
Yeah.
I'm looking for somebody to adopt.
Yeah, I tried that. So, any questions on facilities?
Mike can explain the total
hassle. I was looking for
that one,
but Mike can.
Those are at the job center.
What that?
Those are at the job center.
Okay.
That's
where
the projects are. And every set of washrooms down there, it's about 15 of them, has a little hot water tank collector. It's really low washroom. What happens? Hot water tank goes every 8 to 10 years. Yeah, it's like right here. You don't know it until it's too late. So, we're going away from that. It's actually an energy project recommendation that we talked about.
Mike knows intimately because he was the building chief at the job center for a few years.
Anything else for Mike?
We didn't adjourn yet, so I was getting up.
Oh, I'm sorry. All in favor?
Now you can do it. Okay.